Medical Breakthroughs, the research journey. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Caroline Burden, and you're about to join me on a journey into the fascinating world of medical breakthroughs. But not just any breakthroughs. We're diving into the personal stories, the setbacks, the you will not believe this moments behind the cutting edge research happening right here at Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. Coming up in this episode.
The main thing is the mammogram has to be diagnostic. So that means we can read it to make a diagnosis. And in cases where things have gone not the way that was planned and the images aren't really of great quality, the AI algorithm can flag in real time, you may want to consider repeating an image.
Yep, we're talking about using AI to check your breasts. Joining me for this conversation is Dr. Nisha Sharma. She's an expert in breast screening, in radiology and in AI. She's a consultant radiologist and the director of the breast screening program for Leeds and Wakefield.
In women, when we do a mammogram, when we're looking at the mammogram, we look at what we call breast density. And breast density is really the amount of whiteness on the image that we're looking at, so the picture. And the more whiteness that you have, the more dense the mammogram is. And that reduces your ability to see cancers on the mammogram, because the cancers will be the same appearance as the breast density. So it's almost like a tree with full foliage. If you've got a tree covered in leaves, you're not going to see the bird's nest. But if you have a tree that's bare, you will see the bird's nest easily. So there's a tiny, tiny proportion of women that have very dense breasts. And it's recognised that in that group of women, it can sometimes be difficult to identify a cancer. But in most cases, mammograms are good at picking up cancers. And that's the reason that we use them in the screening program.
Now, how does it work in terms of at the moment, when somebody has a mammogram, how is it reviewed? How does it go from a photo, if you like, an image, into data that is actually then looked at?
So when a lady attends for a mammogram, we take the pictures. And if they've got both breasts, we would do the standard two pictures of each breast. This then is viewed in our PACS system, which is the picture archiving system, which is the system that we use to display the pictures and be able to look at them in detail. And we have special monitors in breast, which are 5 megapixels, so they're high resolution. And that means we can pick up the finer details. So then what we do is we'll look at each image and we compare if the lady's had previous mammograms, we compare with the previous mammograms and we decide, is the mammogram normal or is it abnormal? And if it's normal, we tick a box saying normal, and the lady will get a letter saying everything's fine. And if we think it's abnormal, then the lady's likely to be recalled. But the good thing about the breast screening program is that every single mammogram is read by at least 2 people. So 2 people will read the mammogram, and if they think it's normal, the lady will get a letter. If 2 people read the mammogram and they think it's abnormal or they disagree with one another, then there'll be a group of readers that will then look at the mammogram again and make the final decision, is it normal or not? And we will decide if the lady needs to come back. So there's many pairs of eyes looking at the images.
And how accurate are the images?
Well, that's a difficult question. So the images, the information is there. And obviously, in some women, when they subsequently develop a cancer, which is what we call an interval cancer, there was nothing to see on the original mammogram. So it's something that's new that's developed. But like everything, it's open to interpretation. So it's when you're reading a mammogram, you're looking at the mammogram, and with your level of expertise and experience, you're making decisions with what you see. Is it normal? Is it innocent? Or is it an area of concern? Or is it definitely a cancer? So when you're reading a mammogram, you have human interpretation, and that can vary from person to person. This is why you can have readers that can disagree with one another, because it's based on our interpretation of what we see on the image.
So talk me through then this this new piece of research that is coming out of Leeds?
So in Leeds, we've done two projects related to artificial intelligence, so using AI to assist us in the way that we work. So the first one, which I think is really exciting, is looking at the quality of the mammogram when it's produced. Now, the quality is really, really important, because if you have a really good mammogram, that makes our job as a reader a lot easier to be able to read the mammogram. But if you've got a mammogram where, and it's not anybody's fault, it could be that the lady herself is in pain, or she's anxious, or she's got disabilities that make her less mobile when we're trying to position the breast on the mammogram. And it might be that sometimes when we take the image, it might be blurred. There might be bits of the breast missing, because technically it's difficult to get all the breast on. Or there might be folds or creases, so the quality of the image might not be 100%. And the process currently, when we try to assess quality, is often done downstream, so well after the woman has attended her mammogram and it's been reported. But with this new software, we're able to look at the quality of the mammogram in real time and be able to say, is this a good mammogram or not? And we're currently in the process of training all our radiographers to be able to access their own information regarding all the mammograms that they've taken and the quality of the mammograms that they've taken. And what this allows us for the very first time is have all this information that we've not had before, and then be able to provide education and training particular to each individual to help them improve the quality of the mammograms that they're taking. So we're at the stage where we've done the onboarding, and now what we're going to do is give them time to access the information, digest it, and then we can start using that information to create bespoke education programs for each of the individual radiographers.
And how does AI come into that?
Well, it's AI that's reading the mammogram to tell us about the positioning errors. So it's automatically assessing the image, and it's got a list of positioning errors that it can look at, and it tells us whether they're acceptable or not. And that's saving the radiographer from having to do that job.
And I imagine as well, it must make a huge difference when it comes down to the person who's then reading those mammograms. As you were saying, it was happening further down the line. It must make the whole process a lot quicker.
It will do. So we haven't fully embedded this yet, but it will make the process much better. So what can then happen is that there are several ways that we can work on this. So one is we get an each individual performance, we understand their strengths and weaknesses, and we can continually support, educate and train so that we can drive up quality within the department as a whole. But the other area that we can work on is when a lady attends for her mammogram. Now, the main thing is the mammogram has to be diagnostic, so that means we can read it to make a diagnosis. And in cases where things have gone not the way that was planned and the images aren't really of great quality, the AI algorithm can flag in real time, you may want to consider repeating an image. And we could then do that at the same time, which would stop women from having to come back for a second visit to get that image repeated. And what we need to do is a piece of work to identify what positioning errors are important that do need repeating, and which positioning errors are they okay if we don't repeat the mammogram. And that's work that we will do in Leeds, but also we will gain that experience over time as we're using the algorithm.
And you said that it was the use of the AI within this is going to be twofold. So that is one side, of the project. What's the second?
So the second project that we're doing is where we had actually done a prospective trial looking at AI, so the artificial intelligence ability to maybe replace one of the human readers when reading the mammogram. And so At the moment, this is not allowed to happen within the breast screening programme and can only be in the context of research. So we did a project which was funded by the government through the NHSX AI Award, and we worked with a company, and the mammograms were still being read by the two human readers, but we also had an AI algorithm read the mammogram as well. And really what we wanted to do with this study was, first of all, to see, can we integrate the AI opinion into our system? So does the technology flow and make it easy for us to be able to input that data? But also we wanted to be able to see how the algorithm was operating and the impact that it was having on us as readers in terms of our workload. And so that trial has been completed. We've yet to publish our findings. We're working on the data collection and analysis. But it's been a really interesting exercise because you've now got a third reader. So you've now got three opinions when you're reading the mammogram. And of course, that means that you're going to get more disagreements, which then means you've got more images that need to be reviewed by a group of readers to see whether it's normal or abnormal. So that in itself is interesting, that it potentially could have saved some workload, but not as much as we thought because of the downstream effect of the workload that we were doing. But I think going forward, as we're planning a multi-center trial, which is being led by Professor Fiona Gilbert and Professor Sian Taylor-Phillips from Cambridge and University of Warwick, to lead a multi-center, multi-vendor trial in the UK. And what I mean by that is we're going to assess several different breast AI algorithms, and we're making sure that we're using different mammography machines, so it can be deployed or generalizable. So it's not down to one machine and one algorithm. And that's really exciting because we're also looking at, should we be replacing the second human reader or should we use it differently? So if you've got an algorithm that's very good at saying things are normal, could we just get the algorithm to read all the mammograms and the ones that it thinks are normal are read by one human reader, and if they agree, that's as done. And then the ones that they flag would be read by two human readers. So you've still got human oversight, and we will make that decision. And so that's one way of looking at it. But the other way is the traditional method of where instead of two human readers, you have one human reader and the AI reading the mammogram.
And how have you found the AI to be, you know, is it has it been accurate? Is it too early to tell? You know, it's not enough time to look through the data.
I think the different companies have different algorithms and they work differently. So I think the algorithm that we had used was generating a lot of extra reads because we were disagreeing with the algorithm, and the algorithm was picking up lots of things that didn't need to be picked up. But I have worked with other AI algorithms where their accuracy is much better. And I think the future for breast screening will be working with artificial intelligence. I think we have to embrace the technology because there is a national workforce shortage of radiologists, and in particular breast radiologists. And I think in recognising that, we have to look at the innovations that are coming our way. And we're already using artificial intelligence in our day-to-day working. You know, in our daily lives, we're using it whether we're aware of it or not. And it lends itself to the medical profession. So in healthcare, we can use artificial intelligence to create efficiencies for sure. And certainly you can use it in a low risk setting, which would be like the quality assessment of the images. in administrative tasks. But when we're using it to report mammograms, for me, that's more of a high-risk task. And you want to make sure that the algorithm would perform similar to a doctor. But ideally, what you'd want is better performance if possible.
Yeah.
But the algorithm will not be perfection. And it's really interesting that people think that because we're using a computer, so to speak, that it should be perfect. But what you've got to remember is that computer has been trained to do the job, and it won't be 100% perfect because it may come across scenarios or situations it hasn't been trained for. And then it will compute what it thinks the right answer should be, and it might get it wrong. So we have to recognise that using artificial intelligence is not infallible. Just as we as human beings are not infallible, that we've got to understand that we all make mistakes and the computer can also get it wrong. So we have to be mindful of that. And that's the reason that we need this trial, because by doing this trial, we are testing it in the real clinical environment. We've got safety measures in place. We then know what we need to look for going forward so that when we do implement it, we will have the evidence to say it's safe. We will have the experience to know what we're looking for, and we can reassure our women attending for screening that we're doing the absolute best for them without dropping quality at all. And I think that's one of the things that we've got to remember. I think people talk about artificial intelligence and the government have announced that we're going to use AI in the NHS, but they've made it sound quite simple and straightforward. And it's not.
No.
And I think that's an important point to remember, that we as clinicians, as doctors, recognise the importance of artificial intelligence. We absolutely do, and how it's going to transform the way that we work going forward. But it's not easy. We haven't been trained. This isn't our area of expertise. Our area of expertise is, you know, in healthcare, not in assessing and knowing how algorithms work. So we need to have that infrastructure and support to help and guide us. And we will learn over time. But the other thing is as well, you know, when you deploy an algorithm, so you've got to make sure it's compatible with the machines that you're working with. Has it been trained? Has it got a certificate to say you can use it on these devices, first of all? Then what happens if there's a glitch? You know, like your computer is a glitch, the mouse stops working, we drop the mouse on the table as we do and think that might get it to work again. What do you do if the algorithm has a glitch? How do you know it's had a glitch? So we've got to have these processes in place as well, where when we're relying on a computer to do some of our work, we've also then got to know when the computer is having a malfunction or something has gone wrong, and we've got to be able to pick that up. So it's not only just about getting the algorithm in, training us to work with the algorithm, but it's also monitoring the algorithm for forever, because that algorithm is doing an important piece of work.
It's interesting too, I think, when people talk about using AI more and more in everyday life, they talk about robots taking over our jobs. But actually, from what you're talking about, it that isn't the case. It's about using people's expertise where it's needed. And if AI can do this one thing, then it frees, you know, you up to go and focus on the other areas of healthcare that need that personal human approach.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's key is that at the moment, because artificial intelligence is new to us, we certainly need to keep the human in the loop. So we're not talking about the artificial intelligence taking over our jobs entirely. We're not there yet, absolutely. So what we're looking at is working alongside the algorithm. The algorithm is there to assist us, make us more efficient, and support us in the decision-making process. And I think that's important for the public to understand that. And it's also what the public want. They don't want a robot to make an important decision without a human being in the loop. Because one of the things that we have is intuition. we have all the information available to hand, the algorithm won't have that. So that's really important. But maybe 10 years down the line, that might be different. Because then if our working environment, we're using the algorithms on a day-to-day basis, we've become comfortable with them. We know how they work. We know what their strengths and weaknesses are. There may be some jobs that we can automate as a result of the AI algorithm that doesn't require a human being in the loop. But that has to come with time, experience, and exposure, so that the public can be confident. Because I think what's really important is that the public will have confidence if we have confidence as clinicians. And at the moment, we don't have that 100%. And I think if we can stand tall and say, this is working really well, we can automate these jobs, but we still need to be in the loop for these jobs, then the public will go, we trust you. And we agree with you, that's fine. But at the moment, things are happening at pace. There's too many factors to take into account, and we're not ready for that step just yet. Because we have to also figure out liability and accountability when things don't go well. And for me, as a trust, as an organisation, if we're using an algorithm within our setting, then we are certainly liable and accountable. But I think the government has to take accountability and liability, because if the government is saying at a national level, we have to start using artificial intelligence within the NHS, within the healthcare, then it needs to provide that support and framework for the different trusts to be able to deploy and deliver artificial intelligence within the healthcare successfully and ensure that quality is in place.
With what you've seen so far and with the tweaks and the changes and the further trials that you're hoping will come, what do you think the future looks like for sort of 20 years time in terms of breast cancer screenings?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think artificial intelligence will play an important role. I think we'll use it for administrative tasks. I think we'll use it for quality assessment. And I think we will use it in reading the mammograms. I think the type of service we deliver in 20 years' time might not be the service that you're seeing at the moment. So at the moment, it's population screening, all women invited 50 to 70 years, every 3 years. But I think in 20 years' time, we might go to more risk-adapted screening, where actually we look at the risk for each individual woman, and we then decide those that need to be screened and the frequency they need to be screened based on their risk of developing breast cancer. And therefore, we might use different imaging modalities. So we're using mammography at the moment, but we might use additional tools such as contrast enhanced mammography or breast MRI to supplement that, and particularly in women with dense breasts. So I think the future of screening will look very different in 20 years' time, but I think for sure artificial intelligence will play a very, very important role. Because they're already developing algorithms that can do risk assessment. So it can read a mammogram and tell you the likelihood of you developing cancer in the short term within 5 years.
Wow.
And that's really, really exciting. So there's been pieces of work done, and they've shown that this is actually better than some of the risk models that are well established that we're using in the family history clinics. So I think that area is also really quite exciting. So I think our role as healthcare professionals is that we have to embrace the innovation and work with the companies and help them to develop the algorithms to be of a standard that we need them to be, so that we can deliver good quality work, safe work, where we're identifying the cancers and not bringing women back for things that aren't cancer. But we can only do that if we work collaboratively. And that's what excites me about artificial intelligence, is that I think the future regarding its use and application is really huge. But the thing that scares me the most about innovation is that when we have a new innovation that comes along, we try to put it into pathways that we know. So we make it fit into the way that we've been working for the last 4 or 5 decades. And then we go, it doesn't work really well because it's not doing this, that, the other. But actually, we've got a disconnect. We've got a new way of reading images. We've got an algorithm that can look at things differently to the human being. And then we're making it work the way we've worked for four decades without any innovation. And we need to start thinking outside the box. And we need to start thinking, if we've got this innovation and it works really well, how can we redesign a service that makes use of that skill set, but also the skill set of the clinicians, and create a more efficient and successful service? And it's that bit on the shop floor that is sometimes lacking. And part of the reason is the headspace, because everyone's really, really busy in the NHS. The pressures that we're under are phenomenal, and we're trying constantly to deliver the best care that we can. And then asking us to then think outside the box. You might need an algorithm for that. So, I think it's important for people to know that, you know, we that is our main drive to improve quality. But sometimes we just don't have the tools to hand. And with the use of artificial intelligence, if we can create more efficiencies, we might be able to give ourselves the headspace to innovate more and create more innovative pathways that can improve the speed of diagnosis for breast cancer and treatments. And that's really what we're about. We want people to be able to get their cancer diagnosed as soon as possible. For those that don't have cancer, to be reassured as soon as possible, so that they can move on and not live with the stress and anxiety of the fear of having cancer. But, you know, so I think artificial intelligence is definitely going to play a role in this. And what our screening programme will look like in 20 years, I hope it won't be the way it is now, because with the innovations coming, the information that we have gleaned through research and experiences that we have with the new technologies coming along, we should be creating a more modernised pathway.
And you can find out more about the use of AI in mammograms in our show notes. Coming up on our next episode.
We finished a trial a while ago of an injectable chili pepper. Most people will be aware if they keep eating chilies, they can take more and more, so their nerves adjust to the chili pepper. And people have been trying to do injectable forms to see if that helps reduce people's pain.
Nope, you didn't miss here. Coming up in our next episode, we're talking about using injectable chili peppers to reduce pain for arthritis sufferers. Medical Breakthroughs: The Research Journey is an Under the Mast audio production.